League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a dog.
Before we get to the sad news regarding Sean's favorite cinematic universe, let's get to an update on the trade machine. If you missed it, right before this show began, Shams Charania put out a report that the Rockets are on Jimmy Butler's list. If he were to be traded, the Rockets, the Warriors, and the Mavericks are the teams he would prefer. The Heat are apparently listening to offers. While nothing is imminent with Jimmy Butler's contract situation and the likelihood at this point of him opting out of the final year of his deal, and with the Heat unwilling to give him a big extension but before the year began, they may be looking to not lose him for nothing. So the Rockets are on the list. Sean has developed an addiction to the trade machine over the last hour.
No, it's just I heard the Call of Duty, and so
yes, it's like Kyler Murray.
It's my duty. It's my calling to pick up not arms, but pick up my arm to move the mouse around on the NBA trade machine.
So I have tasked you with, I put some guidelines. Make it so each team benefits. You may have ignored that. We will see.
It's hard.
Because your initial trade was something the Heat would never accept. I am not asking for the Rockets to be bled dry, but just for something that is doable. Let's see what you've got. What do you have? Maybe you've got a couple. Maybe you have a three-team trade. What trade do you have for the Rockets to acquire Jimmy Butler?
Jimmy Butler to the Rockets, to the Heat, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, Dylan Brooks, Jeff Green.
Any draft picks with that, or is that?
Sure, whatever. They don't have draft picks here, so okay. I just kind of...
Just throw in a couple ones. Some protected ones, whatever it might be. Some pick swaps, whatever it might be.
Yeah, three seems to be the new
going number. Unless you're Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
It's five.
But it was like three real ones and two fake ones.
Yeah.
They can juice the numbers a lot with the, like you said, the protections where it's like, this will never come over.
Sure.
So yeah, whatever. And however many picks... Pat Riley wants, hope, you know, probably have to be pretty soon. Can't be too far out.
Are you referencing an old man walk to death is what you're doing?
I just don't know how much Pat Riley is like, sweet, can't wait for 2031.
It's a real thing to consider. I'm not going to deny that. So you are willing to part with one of the Terra twins?
Yeah, well, because I thought, you know, If I put together another trade without one of those two,
using Jeff Green as nearly a centerpiece of a deal may not be enough.
Well,
like you did the last time,
$8 million though.
You're trying to make the money work. Understood.
He's got to. So it's gonna, with all sincerity here, just with the like nuts and bolts of how an NBA trade works, where you have to match the money, you're gonna need one of Jock Landale, Jayshon Tate, or Jeff Green, who all make around $8 million, or Steven Adams, who makes 12 at 12 and a half, as like a puzzle piece to like make this work.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all the young guys, like, they just don't make enough yet. Even Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün.
That stuff comes next year.
Yeah, they're on this year. And Jalen Green's actually super complicated to make it work, because he counts as a different number sending him out as he does receiving.
Yeah.
So
trades
the math there gets super complicated.
And I threw in that the Heat probably aren't looking for a two guard, considering the way their two guard is playing. We had a couple people when we talked about this earlier Art is completely out on it. Jimmy's 35 years old. Nah, that's kind of how Sean approached it. And if I'm from the Rockets side, I would agree. I think the likelihood is if a trade is happening, he's going to the Warriors or the Mavericks, two veteran teams who have championship aspirations and either made the finals last year or have a 35, 36-year-old franchise player who may not have many years of being an elite-level player remaining.
Yes. Although the Mavericks, I am looking at the Mavericks right now. Derek Lively has to be in this trade as the like young piece.
And they already he drafted a young center in the first round. I'm not sure.
Unless they're big PJ Washington fans.
They might want to stretch four. You never know.
Maxi Kleba? Huh?
Trades like this are very complicated because of the contracts, because of the stars. Everyone wants the right value. So it's very hard to get these things done, and sometimes three teams need to be involved. But right now...
Oh, three teams sometimes need to be involved.
Oh, you have another trade. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at that.
A three-teamer, no less. I have two different three-teamers. I've been working hard back
here. We'll go with one. Maybe we close out the show with your final three-teamer.
Okay, then I'll go with this one. To the Heat, it is Jock Landale, Jeff Green, Jayshon Tate, Cam Whitmore.
Wow, what a prize.
To the Heat... Andrew Wiggins, Gary Payton II, Lindy Waters, and Guy
so you're
Santos.
Involving the Warriors in this trade.
Yes.
Which team gets Jimmy Butler in this trade?
The Golden State Warriors.
So what do the Rockets get?
They get Moses Moody, Brandon Podziemski, and Duncan Robinson.
Need that shooter.
Need the shooter. Podziemski, you know, solid.
So you want the Rockets in as a facilitator, not really to get the main piece.
Yes.
And get yourself a shooter.
Also,
a young combo guard and a shooter.
Yes. Also, this works financially wise, but the Heat are receiving eight players while giving up two. This would never actually work in the middle of the season.
You'd have to, how many guys would they have to cut to make that
trade happen? They're at plus six roster spots.
So Sean is using the trade machine to produce an unrealistic trade, which is what everyone does anyway.
Maybe wait until the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah.
To call this one.
Maybe in July. Who knows? Well, he would have to opt in, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
He's a guy who's likely to opt out. So there is one unrealistic trade. Another that's doable, and we'll see what Sean comes up with to end the show. Before we go to break, Sean, the Sony Spider-Man Cinematic Universe seems to be coming to an end. Kraven appears to be the last movie in that universe. Kraven, are you going to watch Kraven?
Yes.
Okay, so am I. But with... what appears to be the end of the Venom series, although who knows? Who knows what Tom Hardy wants to do? And Spider-Man 4 going to be something that's separate. We are done. Sony, let's not forget Madam Web and also
Morbius
as well. Let's not forget those classics. Sony, Cinematic Universe, Spider-Man at least, done. That's a real shame, right? All those movies that we thought were going to come together and create this giant universe for Spider-Man and his kind of rogues gallery or Sinister Six, not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough day for, you know, it's been a tough kind of last few years for movies in general, and I think this is another victim of that. You know, it's just hard to make movies these days.
We'll always have Dr. Morbius.
Also, can we, because I did look up, make sure I'm not forgetting a Sony Cinematic Universe movie. Can we call it a universe when there's six movies total and one hasn't come out yet? Because right now we're talking about Venom, Let There Be Carbon,
three
Carnage,
Venom movies,
Morbius,
three
Madam
Spider-Man
Web,
movies,
Last Dance.
Well, the Spider-Man movies count. The Tom Holland Spider-Man movies are in the universe too.
Oh, really?
I believe they're
not on the Wikipedia page.
Well, maybe they're not. I thought they did. So maybe it's just the offshoots. And seven's pushing it for a universe. But they made seven, though. They got to seven.
They made six. They made three Venom movies, Morbius, Madam Web, Kraven.
Kraven, six.
They made three Venom movies and three not Venom movies.
That's enough for a universe. How many planets go into a universe, Sean?
That's up for debate.
So this is up for debate, too.
Well,
side with the universe.
There's only, what, eight, nine, depending on how you what you call Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 8, 9 in a solar system. And then you got the galaxy, and then you got a universe. There's so many in a universe.
Prove it. Until you do, I'm going with that was a universe, but now it's done for.
Gosh, how do I prove
that? A black hole into the universe. And
by black, some would say that these movies are a black hole.
Well, I was going to get there, but you got there first. There it is.
It was a black hole of my time.
Yeah. A movie that I have some high hopes for is 28 weeks later, or 28 years later. That trailer is out. You can find it anywhere you normally watch a trailer. The star of 28 Days Later is Cillian Murphy. He's supposed to be in it, but it appears he's like a emaciated zombie. If you watch the trailer, there's a zombie that looks oddly like the title or the lead actor in the first movie. We know him from Peaky Blinders and other things, but the trailer makes me think that's going to be a good movie. Danny Boyle, the creator behind the first two, is directing this one. One of the best movies, low-budget movies from that time period, is back. Now, I think it came out in 2002, so not exactly 28 years later. We're just going 23 years later, but I'm excited for that one. You can watch that trailer right now. As you might imagine, things aren't going great for the world, even 23 years later after the zombie apocalypse.
No.
So there that is.
I thought they would have turned.
And speaking of Craven is the lead character in that one. Aaron Taylor Johnson's in the 28 years later.
For a split second, I was like, wait, is this in the Sony universe?
No. This isn't the capper of that where Craven somehow crosses over with the zombies and kills all of them. The actor playing it,
role. By the way, there is 9 more under the other films in development page on the Sony Cinematic Universe Wikipedia
page.
They're
never going to get to them.
So there's more rumored in development ones than there were actual products made.
When the first six are as bad as, well, we don't know about six. The first five were as bad as they were.
Good.
I know you love Venom, but they weren't exactly classics. They didn't lead to a bigger world, a bigger storytelling world, and that's why those that are still in development will remain there or, at this point, are now done for. It is what it is.
Pour one out.
Sorry. Who would have thought that Madam Web wouldn't have been the kickoff to what they thought might have been a 10-year run of movies?
Sorry, Jake Gyllenhaal. You'll never be able to make the Mysterio movie. Sorry, Olivia Wilde. You'll never be able to make Untitled Olivia Wilde Project.
It's a tough one for all of us. It's real unfortunate. So is Spider-Noir off the table too?
I thought they were already making that. I thought that was already... that's the television series.
Oh, okay. It's not a movie. It's a television series. So
yeah,
it'll be safe.
It's on MGM Plus, it looks like.
Nick Cage will be Spider-Noir, which you would have met in the animated movies featuring Crash Out Spider-Man. If you've followed this show the last couple weeks.
I'm sure they love that.
That I've called him Crash Out Spider-Man? He crashed out.
He's like, please say my name.
Sorry. Until you redeem yourself, you're Crash Out Spider-Man to me. Not even Miles Morales. You don't even get the character name.
That's a different version. For most people, that's disrespectful. It's like, hey, don't call me by my character. Don't run up to
me. Like,
if
he's walking in the street, you call him Miles? What if I just called him Crash Out Spider-Man when I saw him in person? I think he'd prefer me calling him Miles Morales. Just look up Spider-Man, Haley Steinfeld, Josh Allen. You know what I'm talking about if you haven't listened to the show the last week or so. Okay, we'll come back with things that don't have anything to do with a cinematic universe, unless you consider the Texans in one. We'll get into more of their Dolphins game. While they're getting a couple guys back, the Dolphins might be without their best offensive lineman, so could be a good thing for the Texans. We'll get to that when we come back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
So, Texans, Dolphins, Sunday. Texans coming off a bye. They're getting healthier. We'll see if Christian Harris and Kenyon Green can play. They both have been designated to return. We'll see if they can practice, get through a week, and are available. And does Kenyon Green go back into the starting lineup? Is that what we're doing?
That's what I saw DJ BNMA threw that out there. That it like, I don't know if it was reporting or if it was
assumption.
But yeah, he was like, don't be surprised if he's
well. They wanted him
the starting unit.
They wanted him to start, you know, until they benched him in the game, and then they brought him back to start the next week.
He did defend it as much as it needs to be defended. I don't think it's like that insane of a thing, because what you're saying is like. Yeah, this is a very vocal Juice Scruggs defense, which I'm not ready to give.
Of course.
Where DJ basically did the look at how they were running the ball in the games that Green was playing versus the ones since Green's been out. And they've ran it well enough to salt away the game in Jacksonville. But for the most part, there's been a lot of stinkers in there. A lot of 20 carries, 50 yards for Joe Mixon in there. So, hey, if this offensive line isn't going to pass block, no matter who the left guard is, might as well have the left guard who can
run block. But we would say that they've pass blocked better. I mean, they haven't been great, but pass blocked better since he's been out of the lineup. So, and, of course, when your franchise quarterback actually hurts the guard because he fell on him because of lack of protection, it highlights the issues.
Yes.
So we could see Kenyon Green back in the starting lineup, which – probably doesn't comfort a lot of you. It'd be great to run the football. The Dolphins don't stop the run very well. It would lead to situations where CJ is in more comfortable passing situations. We know the stats about being in third and long so much, so maybe that's what they get to. We will see how the week of practice goes. But one guy who's unlikely to play is on the other offensive line. Teron Armstead, longtime star left tackle, has missed time throughout his career, has never played an entire year, just been off the injured. He tried to go against the Jets, pulled himself out of the game on the first drive, tried to come back on the second drive, could not do it. So he missed almost the entirety of the game. And in his place was a rookie left tackle. The Dolphins are now down to both their backups. Their right tackle got hurt like 4 or 5 games ago. They have not, speaking of teams losing tackles and not being able to run, or offensive linemen and not being able to run.
Okay.
Kenyon Green out, can't run the football. They lost their right tackle, couldn't run the football since, and now they may be down to a backup left tackle, which you think to yourself, Danielle Hunter?
Yeah.
Will Anderson?
All right.
Let's get going. So Patrick Paul is the left tackle in question, the rookie.
Coug.
Exactly. Coug, he was in the studio with John and Lance during the draft process. He played the majority of the snaps last week. Was fine. I think 2 pressures and 40-something pass snaps. So that's fine for a rookie. Didn't give up a sack. But it is Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson on the road in your first road start. He has played here and there on the road when Armstead's maybe missed a couple plays or not, but this is different. Now, he'll have the whole week of practice to get ready, so that's an advantage for the Texans, at least on paper.
And it is a road start. It is at Energy Stadium, so it.
Well, they crank the noise in there,
neutral
right?
Crowd.
Yeah,
it's a bowl game. He's playing in a bowl game, right?
Did he for the Cougs? Probably.
Probably. Yeah, at least one.
Yeah.
I don't think they made it last year, though. But, I think that lining up against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, like, you're going to get one of them every single play, more or less. Every play that they're both in, you're going to get one of them.
Sure.
And even when they're out, like, it's not like you get a huge break. With the reserves. So I do think that should be the – when we're talking about this game later in this week, like we should keep that in mind, that the Dolphins are going to have to be very, very protective of their offensive line with the quick game, with the screens, which I know Mike McDaniel does a lot of, and he does it well, but they're going to have to really manage Tua to – get him through that. Not manage Tua specifically.
Manage that line.
Yeah, the time to throw is going to have to be as low as possible, which that's already kind of what their offense is built off of.
They're built on getting the ball out quick. And you go back to last week, 40-something dropbacks didn't get touched once. So the guys held up, the backups held up against the Jets defensive front. That's pretty good. doesn't have the elite guys that the Texans do on the outside, but they can get after the quarterback, and that line played well enough. They don't run the ball at all, so they may be able to get the Dolphins in situations where Will Anderson and Danico Autry and Daniil Hunter can tee off, because it's third and nine, and certainly that makes the job more difficult. You have to hold up a little bit longer because of down and distance, but it's a game, like Sean said, we'll get more into it later, that could be particularly frustrating for observers if you're a Texans fan because of how quickly that ball gets out. It may make the pass rush something that isn't a factor just because of the way the Dolphins play. So you have to hope you can mitigate or slow down. You just got to make sure to get them in situations where it ain't third and four, yeah, and they can run some of their mesh stuff or even just throw a screen. Johnny Smith's been a big part of the offense too. That might be a Christian Harris thing if he's back and ready to go. So we'll get more into that later. But that's the update. The big news for the Texans, they're probably going to go against two backup tackles. Now, the right tackle's been there for like five games now, so he's pretty much he's practically a starter.
Yeah.
He's played a lot of snaps, played last year too. So, but the focus could be on making Patrick Paul think, not just with letting a guy go after him, but making him deal with games. We know something the Texans don't do very well. You might want to put the rookie in that bind on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it'll also be very frustrating, or it's likely to be frustrating for Texans fans seeing a Shanahan tree guy who can do all the screens and all the games and all the stuff, again, to limit the time to throw of his quarterback to protect his offensive line when the Texans have a Shanahan tree guy who can't do that.
Yeah.
like that is already going to be frustrating. Like, how many screens have we seen just like either completely fall flat with the blocking of it, they just don't seem like they're ever on the same page with these screens. The one time they were it was an effective screen, not the one time, but one memorable time. Got
called back.
It was the Nico Collins called back touchdown. So there does seem to be, for whatever reason, Bobby Slowick is the Shanahan tree guy who didn't get that gene of, I can kind of just get the ball in my playmaker's hands very fast to protect my quarterback. Like, that he knows to do it. It's just a problem of implementation and execution. And the Dolphins offense, I don't want to, you know, simplify and say it'll be all that, but
it's a big part of it.
You're going to get a lot of A-chain with a blocker in front of them. You're going to get a lot of Waddle and Hill with a blocker in front of them, catching the ball at the line of scrimmage.
And just going back to their last game in overtime, Jonnu Smith, the first two receptions, yeah, of his game, and he had been a big part of the offense, were, hey, first we're going to just line you out up behind a wide receiver, throw a screen, you're going to go for 20 yards. The O-line's going to get out in front and make a chunk play. The next, we're going to motion you from outside back closer to the inside and throw another one to you for 15 yards. Now, they don't really have a tight end like him. I mean, Brevin Jordan probably would have filled that role, but we have not seen
Stover hasn't done that.
We have not seen, or Dalton Schultz, we have not seen either of those guys take advantage or be featured in that way, which is something Jonnu Smith will be. So that's kind of an early preview of that. We won't know who's practicing until we won't have anything on it till Thursday, because it'll be Wednesday after the show before some of the news about practice comes out. So we'll get to that later in the week. I did want to get to some email stuff when we come back, because he spoke about Alpi, and it leads back to something we talked about because of some sound from Alperen Şengün before the year started. His foul baiting, he said he came up with the move to draw more fouls, and now his coach is pretty much telling him to knock it off. So we'll play both those when we come back. But first, I want to talk about Monument Chevrolet. You should go out there. It's the holiday season coming up. Maybe you want to make a big purchase and get someone a car. Maybe you just want to buy one for yourself. Why not? And if you're looking for a Chevy, Monument Chevrolet is the place you go. When you go out there, just remember, they understand you don't want to spend a lot of time out at the dealership. So when you meet a salesperson, maybe you meet Isaias. He is their salesperson of the week. He's going to know that you want a car and you want it quickly. They're going to get that done for you, and they're going to do it without sneaking in a fee or an upcharge. They don't do that. So if you check them out at monumentchevrolet.com, the price
is the price. They're high-quality cars, whether they be pre-owned or new. And maybe you're a business owner and you want to add to your fleet. They do that for you as well. They have the sixth largest dealership in the country. So check out the inventory on monumentchevrolet.com and then go out there, 3940 Pasadena Freeway off of Beltway 8 and 225. They've got great offers. They have their monthly offer right now. You get 1.9% financing on a new 2024 Chevy Silverado, 1500 crew cab, rally sport truck with a 5.3-liter engine. Or maybe you're into electric vehicles and you want one. All new electric vehicles, 0% financing for 60 months for well-qualified buyers. And because they've been doing this for 50 years, they have these deals to honor this special anniversary. Across their inventory, you're going to get special deals on cars. So you got the monthly deals. You got the special deals because of 50 years in the business. Monument Chevrolet is a place you want to go. They take care of you, they make it easy, they make it quick, and they don't try to fool you. Check them out at monumentchevrolet.com and Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. Your Rockets have an NBA Cup game tomorrow. The NBA Cup quarterfinals start tonight. Rockets Warriors trying to end a 15-game losing streak in the most important game in the matchup. The last two, they played and got beat without Steph Curry on the floor. We'll see with Steph Curry on the floor, can the Rockets end what I didn't know was a long streak, because who was paying attention to the Rockets for those 3 years before last year? And if the Warriors were beating them, who cares? No one was keeping track.
Yeah.
When do you think they started keeping track and made that graphic? Do you think they started it with Ime, or did once it got to 14, they're like, hey, we need a graphic for this?
I think last year Silas, it got brought up as everyone was kind of throwing dirt on Steven Silas that yes. last year. I mean, I think it was like from December on, everyone was like, okay, so they will be having a new coach at some point. So I'd imagine it was then is when somewhere at Space City Home Network, they're like shuffling around papers. They're like, Craig Ackerman was doing research. He was like, no way. And he was flipping through his pages.
What?
No way.
Wait a minute.
Is this before I got the job? I actually don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true, but it feels like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. Like we said last time they played, the most surprising part is that Ime is, I guess, 0-for-5.
Yeah,
is that right?
He has not been able to
whatever the number
in this streak. And
yes,
and it doesn't matter who the Warriors play; they just beat the Rockets.
I can't wait to get off an agenda if the Rockets win when Steph Curry plays and lose when he doesn't.
You're gonna pull that Bill Simmons Ewing theory thing, where
Curry curse.
Mm-hmm. We'll see if the Rockets can break the Warriors curse.
Has Steph Curry ever beat the Rockets? Who knows?
I haven't seen it.
I don't know.
Was HD a thing?
If you have a five year old child does not know Steph Curry beating the Rockets in a meaningful game,
I'm sure your 5 year old won't know after this game. Actually, is your 5 year old gonna remember anything that happens in 2024?
Hey, this is the highest stakes Rockets Warriors game
in a long
since
time.
2019. Second round of the 2019.
This show has taken a joking approach to how important the NBA Cup is, but Sean is not wrong. All the other regular season games for the Rockets since that point have meant nothing. This one at least gets you closer if you win to a trophy. And Vegas.
A trophy. The Emirates trophy.
Well, the Emirates NBA Cup trophy, yes. But as far as trophies that we hold in high regard in NBA basketball,
number two, I would say.
Behind MVPs?
No, behind Larry O'Brien.
But you mean team awards, team trophies?
Yeah.
So of the two, is it behind the Eastern Conference Finals trophy, winning trophy? No.
It's behind a
yes,
West.
It is.
It's behind a West ahead of an East.
No chance. It's behind both. It's behind
the last 20 years.
It's behind. No, it's behind the East because the Rockets can never win one. Yes, you're right in that. I will give you that. Because the Rockets won't ever be, unless there's a realignment, they won't ever be eligible to win the Eastern Conference Finals trophy. Yes, it is ahead of that one for the Rockets. And they're on the path.
And it's also like Eastern Conference.
So, I mean, the Celtics just won the title at the East.
Teams just get that.
The Celtics just won the title at the East.
Participation trophy, really. For the Celtics, Heat, and whichever team LeBron's on. It's just
that's kind of been the formula. And Milwaukee got thrown in there once.
Yeah. Oh, and the New Jersey Nets back in the 2000s.
Well, you're going back a long time now for that.
Yeah, just you get that trophy, and then you go to the finals and it's swept.
Except last year.
Losing five.
Except last year.
Yes, except last year.
And the time Milwaukee won, too, since I'm deciding to just rip this entire joke apart. Okay.
What I'm saying is the East sucks. There we go.
They aren't good this year, but they do have the Cavs, who no one really believes in, and the Celtics, who are the defending champs. All right, let's get to this. Before the season started, this caught my eye. Or caught my ear, I guess, put it that way. Albertson Goon coming into the year discussed changing the way he played a little bit, and he was trying to become an unethical hooper. He was saying, you know what, I got a move that's going to make me unethical. Here's Albertson Goon on foul baiting before the year started.
I saw you using kind of a new move in preseason where you would hold your arms out and kind of draw the fouls by going through defenders, kind of like James Harden,
yeah.
Joel Embiid. Did you look at some film of those guys in the offseason to add that to your game?
Coach Cam, you know, he's close to players like Darius and all those players, so he taught me that move. And it's hard to guard for the bigs, you know, because I play with the 7-foot, 7-1, 7-2. They have long arms, and, you know, it's just hard to do for me, but it's another bag in the court for me.
This show is not a fan of unethical hoopers. We don't like foul baiting. I speak for myself here. I don't know exactly how Sean feels. We're not, or I am not a fan of searching for calls, particularly in the way that one James Harden used to do, or a lot of other players used to do, where you're going to just extend your arm, hope someone rakes down, and then raise your arm up to draw the foul in the lane and go to the line. Albertson Goon, I don't know if we've seen it so much or it's been that effective, but he decided he was going to break that move out. While team success is there, his actual personal stats haven't been great. I'm not going to attribute it all to the unethical nature of his hooping, but Ime Udoka has some thoughts on how Albertson Goon is playing and some of his, let's just say, the word I guess I'm going to use is whining about calls. He is telling his best player to cut it out.
Just continue to be a physical presence on both sides, but really my thing is to concentrate on the things you can control, which is, you know, looking to score and not looking to get fouled as much, playing through contact and not looking for a call or letting missed shots affect you on the other end. And so you know, they went after him tonight. You know, anytime he had it in the post and he found guys, and that was the reason we had those wide open looks. And so some nights it's going to be a scoring thing. Some nights it's going to be facilitating, and he has to be able to do both. But my biggest thing with him is I say, don't get the European out of your game and play through stuff. Stop crying.
Now, there was a debate on the morning show. John came from a position of strength because I think he had read either the transcript or the quotes by the media about it, about whether Ime Udoka said, don't get the European out of your game or get the European out of your game. I believe that's a don't get, but let's hear it again, Sean. Does he say don't get or get it out of your game?
My biggest thing with him is I say, don't get the European out of your game.
That sounds like don't get the European out of your game. And you say, what are you talking about? Aren't Europeans known for flopping? That became a topic of conversation this morning, too. I think if you look at the FIBA game and the way NBA players have to adjust to not getting calls early on in those tournaments, I think Ime is saying, hey, play like a European. Stop looking for calls. Just go play. And as a founding member of the Del Olalea Show Ethical Hooper Fan Club, I agree. Stop foul baiting. It sucks to watch. I haven't particularly seen it so much from Sean Goon, but his head coach has. Stop playing for fouls. Go play through it. And hopefully, if it goes the way Ime wants it to go, the numbers will increase, the efficiency will increase, and Alperen will be the player. Or he'll play up to the numbers we thought he would reach and play up to the expectations, because the team has been good. I don't know if Alperen's been at his best, but it has not mattered so much because of the contributions from the likes of Tari and Dylan and Amen Thompson.
Yeah, he's gotten a little bit of Angel Reese in his game this season.
Getting his own misses?
Yeah, it's been a lot of tip-in miss tip in. Like, it's been a lot of that kind of volleyballing up around the back. That's why, like, the efficiency stuff, I'm not super worried about it because I do feel like some of it's just kind of layups just not being dialed in and stuff like that. I don't know if it's a, you know, the shot isn't falling, like his actual jump shot isn't falling as much as if he just made the layups, like his all of his percentages would go way up. And that's something where he's been good at in the past. So I do expect that to regulate a little bit, but I don't know if maybe Ime Udoka thinks part of the reason he's missing these layups is because he's either searching out contact or getting contact and it's getting in his head where he's, you know, you see it with like Luka Doncic or other players, you know, Harden back when he was here, where if they don't get a call, you can kind of see it snowball in their reaction and they kind of get out of their game in that way.
I like the Şengün who plays through contact.
You don't like him when he, or no, you'd like him when he.
I like Şengün when he acts tough. Okay. I don't like the one who's trying to make me dance. Go out there and play through contact,
yeah.
and if you get to the line, so be it. But make your shots. He's gonna be fine. I ain't worried about Şengün. But his head coach has noticed.
And as a big man who's gonna be scoring big man, an offensive kind of engine of his team down in the post. You are just going to get to the line. Just people are going to foul you when you're taking the ball to the basket, when you're being aggressive, when you're, you know, getting layups, when you're fighting for boards. Like, you're going to get fouled doing that. So I do think, and same thing with, like, Embiid a little bit, where I don't know how much you need to try to goose those numbers with the unethical hooping to try to get to the line. I feel like you're going to get to a line a good amount, an acceptable amount, just by playing your game.
I would agree. So we'll see what he looks like against Kevon Looney and Jackson Davis tomorrow night as the Rockets try to advance to the semifinals of the NBA. Emirates NBA
Thank
Cup.
Thank you.
Shout out to Adam Silver for the money-making moves that he's doing to help the NBA.
And shout out to the Emirates.
Well, the airline company.
Yes.
Not the UAE. Or maybe you want to shout out the UAE.
No, I won't. Not yet. Until they drop the bag. Then.
Yeah, no free ads.
Yeah. UAE Sean over here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to be out this week, Dell. Why? Oh, going to Dubai.
Oh, for what? Don't worry
Business.
About it. Stop asking questions.
Yeah. Stop pocket watching.
Yeah. Hey, don't ask you about where you are. Stop asking me questions. Something to get to before we wrap it up. Sean will do the thing where we should be in a break, but we'll combine and we'll get out of here at a relatively normal time. AJ DeBanza, he is the number one overall recruit. He's a projected top pick in the NBA draft. He has selected BYU. Which one of those things is not like the other? A top... he's going to be... Now, he went to prep school in Utah, but he's not from the area. He's from Massachusetts. I think Brockton is where he's from. And he becomes the first five-star recruit to commit to BYU since the ESPN recruiting base started in 2007. Is it possible he's the first ever BYU five-star recruit?
Yeah.
I think it's wholly possible.
He's got to be.
Yeah. So
I don't know how they were doing recruiting like way back in the day. Maybe
yeah.
Ainge
Maybe,
was because
yeah,
Ainge was like a three-sport athlete. Too,
possibly. So. Now, he credits Kevin Young, who coached KD and Devin Booker, getting him
okay.
there.
So the NBA head, connections with
yeah,
the coach.
Yeah. Yeah, the coach coached some stars that he loves, so he's going to go there. But that's not the only reason. The projected NIL package for AJ DeBanza, $7 million. I didn't know BYU was rolling like that.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were in that type of game. Maybe the BYU people can come run the Astros if they're going to be spending money like that.
Yeah.
$7 million for a recruit to probably just play 1 year if everything goes well for him. He's likely going to be there for a year, but
yes.
BYU gets him.
Man, making Jock Landale money.
I always do this. Kelvin Sampson's like, what? This is the Big 12 I'm dealing with where BYU's going to get a guy for $7 million? Now, can't knock what the Cougs are doing. They've got five stars across the recruiting
class.
They're
doing all right.
They're doing just fine. But Kelvin Sampson's like, yeah, we're doing pretty well. Then he looks to the west and go, this is BYU. This isn't even Kansas.
Yeah.
BYU's willing to drop that type of bag on a kid.
Yeah, you move to this conference. You're worrying about Kansas, Baylor. Yeah, this year you have Arizona moving in, although I don't think Arizona's very good this year. And you're like, what, I got to deal with these guys now? These guys are spending money?
If this is going to be a thing where BYU is going head-to-head with the best teams in the country for recruits, and they got the money to burn?
Yeah, they're using a mid-level exception.
You put it during the break. That's Jayshon Tate money. They're giving
Jacques
to AJ DeBanza.
Yeah. Well, all these guys the Heat don't want
in the trade. Sorry,
Jimmy
Sean.
Butler.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how that goes as Sean continues to formulate trades.
One.
We might wrap the show up with that. But man.
Yeah. I wonder if it's if his market was $7 million to go to BYU, and that's why he went there. But I know UNC was in the mix because when I looked up UNC football earlier, he came
up. Bill Belichick, yeah.
I know UNC was in the mix. I wonder if it was a decision of, and I'm just throwing a number out here, like $4 or $5 million from UNC versus $7 million to go to BYU, where BYU has, I mean, we see it with baseball all the time too, where a less desirable location, at least theoretically. Maybe he wants to go to BYU. Like you said, he went to prep school in Utah, but maybe it's a case where the giant number is to go to somewhere more unconventional than, you know, UNC, who thinks, we don't have to get in a bidding war with BYU. Are you kidding me? Look at the rafters. Look at all those championships. Look at the retired jerseys that we have. We don't need to be getting in a scrap with Mark Popolis, BYU.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Danny Ainge. He was part of the process. He came in to talk with DeBanza.
Of course.
They pulled out all, I don't know if they got Jimmer to talk to him. They got all the big guns, the BYU big guns, to get this job done. So
who was the other guy that got suspended?
For relations?
Yes. Davies, I want to say.
I forgot what his name was, but
I think it was Davies.
He was on that team. And
Brandon Davies?
It might be. I don't remember, but I remember why he got suspended. It's for he was doing things
premarital.
He was doing things that BYU doesn't tolerate, certainly doesn't endorse. And he's the only one who did it, and they caught him. In all the history of BYU athletics, he's the only one.
Ruined Jimmer Fredette's, I think it was last year.
Do we remember that Jamal Williams played at BYU?
Oh, yeah. The running back for the Saints? Yeah. Lions.
Lions at one point. Saints. I don't know where he is now, if he's still in the league, but just so happens that the one athlete in BYU history who couldn't avoid getting caught was a guy on Jimmer Fredette's team as they were trying to make a run in the tournament. All right, that music means we're done. Sean may have another trade we can get to tomorrow as far as...
Yeah, I'll bookmark it.
Make sure to save it. We'll get to it. See how ridiculous that one is when we get to the show tomorrow. I'm done for the day. The show is done, so what does that mean?
We did it!
We did do it. Gallant and George up next. I'll talk to you tomorrow. But before I go, I want to talk about Super Happy Incredible Toys. It's a place you go to if you're looking for something for a big kid like yourself, or you have a kid that you want to introduce to some of the classic toys of the past. And they have current stuff too, but if you're a G.I. Joe person or Thundercats, that's all there for you. They welcome you. It's a very chill place where you can walk around and relive the best times in your life. The stuff that got you happy as a kid. That's why Super Happy Incredible Toys is the name of the place. You can check them out on Instagram. Just type in Super Happy Incredible Toys or check out their Facebook page with the same name. You can go out there too. 221 East 11th Street in the Heights. That's the storefront. Check them out. They welcome you. Maybe you want to play some video games. They have a great vintage Street Fighter 2 game that is operational as well. So from the best toys, the best art, all the things that got you excited as a kid, and maybe you want to introduce your kid right now to them. It's Christmas time. It's a great place to go find the perfect gift for someone. Super Happy Incredible Toys. Just check them out on Facebook at Super Happy Incredible Toys and Instagram as well.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here, and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.